Welcome to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. I am Doc Mike, host of the podcast. A series of Forrest Gump-like events have brought me to where I am, a small-town country dentist. My experiences in country living, country freedom, country dentistry, and my reaction to pertinent current events may help you live a life of more freedom and less worry. Thank you for choosing the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Now let's get to today's freedom-inspiring episode. Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thanks for joining me here live on Real Liberty Media, or if you're downloading the podcast, I appreciate that too. It's awesome. Man, we are doing something new and different today. I hope it works out. It kind of looks like it's working right now. So we'll find out, though. I'm going to get feedback from the chat room. And that reminds me, man, if you come and join us live, you can get right in the chat room, join us live, and, get in the conversation. And, you know, help me out because, you know, I think I'm not going to change stuff. And then I change stuff. But this is going to be for the better because last week, I'm just going to explain this. No, I'm not. I'm going to explain it in a minute. I want to get to the intro because I always forget stuff if I don't go through my notes. So first of all, this is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media and I don't turn left. If you could, if you're on any social media sites, which I wouldn't blame you if you're not, but would you please post that we're live? And, Pebbles is going to make an appearance, it sounds like. Anyway, post to your social media sites, let people know we're live, and let people know where to find the podcast. Tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern, Hal Anthony's show will be on. Holy cow, I'm telling you, every time I think of that guy doing 2 hours straight, no breaks, I don't think he even takes a break to drink, to be honest with you. It's just amazing how fast he goes. And a show packed full of information, so that's awesome. The 28th of September, which will be this Wednesday, I won't have a live show. I may record a show earlier in the day, and we can play it at the regular 9 p.m. Eastern slot. We'll see how that goes. Okay, so I want to tell you guys just a little something about what happened last week. So I was recording the audio separate from the video. Now, we don't do live video, but I do put the video up on Rumble, BitChute, and Odyssey. And right now, there's a giant bear in the frame, so when you see this, you'll see this giant bear resting his head on my head, his chin on my head. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Okay, so I record the video at 30 frames per second, but this is what's weird. So the audio is, you know, I don't know how many bits per second or whatever it is. But when you cut out 1/30th of a second of video, it's not the same amount of audio that gets cut. And yeah, I know there's a way you could do it, but I didn't. And I was thinking after last week trying to edit that audio and video, I was like, okay, that's it. I got to figure something else out. So I figured it out. I kind of worked on it all week long, tested it a few times. We did a live test earlier today, and it looks like it's working. So we're going to find out. Hopefully it's working. All right, let's get to, you know, updates and stuff like that. I did want to tell you guys, my cardiac rehab is going awesome. I'm not kidding. I was shocked to have a heart attack, of course. I bet everybody is pretty shocked when they have a heart attack because it's like, well, number one, I don't know if you expect it or not. I can tell you this, like I knew the way I'd lived my life, you know, in the first probably 35, 40 years, I probably deserved to have a heart attack at some time in my life, but in the last 15, 20 years, you know, I've been a lot better at eating foods that are good for you, You know, I didn't avoid the bad foods, that's for sure. And I probably ate too much of the bad foods, but I didn't. You guys heard the story before. I didn't have high blood pressure. I didn't have high cholesterol. I just, I had the surgery. 5 days later, I had blood clots in my heart, and it gave me a heart attack. So, you know, it was a shock to have a heart attack, and then to have to deal with the aftermath of that heart attack is like, okay, change your diet, you know, move more and eat less. I mean, that's really the story for Americans, the bottom line. Move more, eat less. You'll be better off if you do. And, you know, I'm going to give you just a couple quick tips here. Don't eat meals after 5 o'clock. I wouldn't even eat a meal after 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Unless you're working your ass off, that late afternoon, evening meal is a waste. Unless you're going to eat really healthy, do that. And don't eat a lot, because those calories, you're not going to burn them off sleeping. So, but I just wanted to tell you, I lost a few more pounds. I'm down to 215 pounds, which I'm 6 foot tall, basically, or I was. It's feeling better, man. And I'm telling you, it's kind of crazy, but even heavy stuff that you have to carry, like, you know, we have a pellet stove. They're 40-pound bags of pellets, and I've basically lost like 30 pounds now. So when I pick up that 40-pound bag, really I'm only carrying another 10 pounds, which is awesome. And getting up and down the hill is a lot easier. So I've been going to cardiac rehab. When I started that whole thing, I was like, okay, you know, this is going to be a long road. I get it. You know, I got a lot of work to do. But what's really kind of crazy is I started that cardiac rehab, I bet it was 2 weeks after my heart attack. And, you know, they said it was going to be probably 24 sessions. That's 3 times a week for 8 weeks. And, you know, they told me there's like a little chart on the wall, and they say, you know, we want you to work this hard, like right in the middle somewhere, you know. We don't want you to work hard. We want you to work, you know, like fairly, I forget. Their scale is really stupid. It goes like light, I can't even tell you. But so the first couple days I was just kind of figuring out the machines, because this is how they do cardiac rehab where I'm going anyway. So you do 4 aerobic machines for a number of minutes each. And when I first started, it was like 5 minutes. 4 minutes. We want you to do 4 minutes on each one of these machines. Okay, so I did 4 minutes. And, you know, it's like not a big deal. It was just trying to figure out how to use the machines and, you know, get my 4 minutes in. And then, you know, after a couple of days, they move you up to, you know, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 7 minutes. Well, now I'm doing 11 minutes on each machine. And I'm not only doing the, sorry, I'm having a hard time swallowing here. Not only doing the just the entry level, so I'm on, you know, like mid-level on all those machines, which is awesome because my heart is able to do it and my lungs are able to do it and my weight is able to do it. It's not a problem, you know. And actually, you know, I told my office staff the other day, I was like, you know, the thing is, like, I kind of feel like I'm in better shape now than I was before I injured my knee, which kind of led to this whole thing. I injured my knee. I got knee surgery. You know, I injured my knee. I was not exercising for about 8 weeks. I had knee surgery, and 5 days later, I had a heart attack. And, you know, so then I'm in, you know, I'm kind of like in recovery now from all of that stuff. But the thing is, like, I'm doing 44 minutes of continuous aerobic activity with my heart in the target zone, and I'm not exhausted. I'm actually starting to feel like, I've been sleeping really well. I run out of energy, but this has been normal for me for the last, I don't know, year or two. Like at about shortly after 9 p.m., I'm done. I'm like ready to go to bed. And when I go to bed, like I am not one of those people that has trouble going to sleep. I just like go to sleep within a couple minutes. So that's kind of cool. And I sleep until I'm done sleeping. I don't wake up to an alarm. I just wake up when my body's done sleeping. So everything kind of has gone back to normal for me. And that's what I was getting at, basically, is my rehab is going well. Thank you for, you know, all the kind thoughts and, you know, just supporting me in every way. It's just been awesome. And, yeah, it's going good. So we're going to stick with that. The diet has changed, you know, and it's kind of funny. One of my coworkers, I think she's sort of, you know, how would I want to say it? She's not upset, but she wishes I would eat more stuff like I used to. And I think it's because, I don't know why it is, but it's kind of funny because I don't want to eat the stuff that I ate before as much. I mean, I still have a desire. As a matter of fact, when I'm done tonight, I'm going to go have like a, what do you call it? Kind of like a French dip sandwich. The meat's been cooking for hours and we have some odd juice. And yeah, it's beef. But I'm just not going to eat as much as I normally have eaten in the past. I'm not going to be a glutton about it. I'm going to enjoy what I get to eat and I'm going to eat it and, you know, feel good about it. I've been eating a lot more salad lately with fish on it. So either canned tuna, canned salmon, or sardines, and that's really good. I like those fish, so it's not really a problem for me at all to have made that transition. And, you know, I'm feeling good, and I'm lighter, and yeah, I'm probably healthier, and I'm probably still going to die of some stupid thing, of course, because we all are going to, but at least I am doing what I can to keep, I was going to say keep that from happening again, but hell, that was such a fluke. I mean, I honest to God believe that this heart attack was a fluke. And maybe that's a thing with people who have heart attacks. It's like, you know, it was a fluke. I shouldn't have had a heart attack. But I truly feel like I shouldn't have had a heart attack. That it was a result of this surgery and blood clots and the COVID shot, basically. Those three things caused an issue, at least for me. I just want to say something. I know that Canada just got hammered by this hurricane, and I think the damn thing set a record for the lowest barometric pressure of any storm ever in Canada. That could be right. The last I heard was it was an unofficial reading, but I'm not following it like constantly. I'm sure they'll come up with the official result soon, and then we'll know for sure. But I am so done with Oregon weather right now. I am not kidding at all about this. We have had virtually no rain, and this is Oregon. This is a state where people think, oh yeah, Oregon, it rains there all the time. Yeah, it does rain here all the time. So where in the heck is it? So, like for a while there, we were up to 66 days with no rain, and then some, you know, barely qualifying cloud moved through and spit on us, and they counted that as rain. But I'm telling you, it's been, okay, this is probably going to be the first September that we didn't have any measurable rain. Well, that's a lie, because the cloud that kind of spit for a couple minutes counted. But we need rain, and I'm tired of the sunshine and blue sky. And, you know, it's a little bit, the weather is just like insidious in a way, because it's blue sky and sunshine and just the right temperature. Like, it hasn't been hot, it hasn't been cold. It's been cool enough in the morning that you think it's going to be fall, and then just like just warm enough. I know Portland says they're going to be at 87 degrees today. We're nowhere near that. It's going to be, I bet what it is right now, about 78. Well, my cheap thermometer says 82, but I got a feeling it's not. Oh, yeah, the other. Oh, no, it says 77. So 77 degrees outside. And that's the thing, man. It's like so nice. I'll tell you this, like every single day, I've been getting home from work, the days I do work. There's always a game on, either an NFL, like Monday or Thursday night NFL game, or the Brewers are on, and, you know, they're either just starting a game, or they're kind of halfway through a game, the Brewers anyway. And when I get home, it's like 5, 5.15, 5.30. I just sit outside, man, in what we're calling now the clubhouse. I just sit out there, kick back, watch a game, enjoy it. It's the perfect temperature for sitting outside, and it's killing me. I'm not kidding. It's just killing me. I want the rain. I want a storm. I want all these leaves to blow off, you know, and get on to autumn, for crying out loud. Although, I do have to stop and say, thank God it's been sunny and warm, because some of the vegetables that need that little extra bit of heat, like the tomatoes that were late this year, they're ripening, and we're going to have a really nice harvest. So that's good. All right. So enough of me whining about blue skies and sunshine, right? I'll bet. Yeah, that could irritate some people on either side of that spectrum, whether they're you know, in a heat wave or whether they're, you know, in some kind of cold weather. Although I saw a map of the United States, I think yesterday or something, and there was nothing going on. I mean, there was nothing. So, I don't know. Maybe everybody's kind of in the same boat. And by the way, I just want to say, I've got the Badger game on the big screen behind in the front of the studio here. We're playing Ohio State. In Ohio State, and we got them right where we want them. We're down 31-7, which has got to be terrifying the Ohio State Buckeyes, because, you know, that's not nearly enough points to be ahead of the Wisconsin Badgers. No way. We're just toying with them now, like you know, like the cat and mouse. We're just you know, kind of letting them think they're going to get away before the big pounce comes. So anyway, okay, so I've got stuff to talk about today, you know, the more serious stuff. What are we going to do? What are we going to do when this stuff comes to fruition? Well, first of all, I want to talk about Putin, because Vladimir Putin, because I heard somebody the other day talking about him, and I was like, oh my God, this is so true. But Putin's got to be laughing all the way to the bank right about now. He has most of the rest of the world holding their breath, honest to God. Like, you may think that, you know, Putin's made a mistake, and maybe he did kind of underestimate what it was going to take to, you know, to beat Ukraine or to win a war in Ukraine or whatever. But look at how many countries are seriously in trouble right now because they fell for a fantasy. They fell for some kind of emotional good feeling, you know, about the environment and the climate change and saving the world and all that stuff. And they gave up their sovereignty, basically, by giving up, by removing their own access to very serious things like food, energy, and fossil fuels. And Putin has got to be laughing right about now, because he's got those things. I mean, you know, a lot of people depended on grain and stuff coming out of the Ukraine. And, I mean, basically, the world is not getting nearly as much grain out of Ukraine as they have in the past. You know, and other foods and power that is being, you know, well, power that countries no longer produced for themselves. They bought it from, you know, foreign countries. Well, now, you know, they're basically have to kind of sit with their hands out, like, you know, please, may I have some more porridge? Instead of being in a position of power, in a position of negotiation. No, they're not. They're basically powerless. And I don't mean just the energy type power. I mean the power, political type power. What are they gonna bargain with? You're gonna sanction Russia into submission? Really? When they have all the power and the fossil fuel and food, grains that we all depend on? I don't think so. Yeah, good luck with that. I don't know of a country out there other than China who doesn't depend on Russia. And maybe they do. I mean, maybe they do. I don't know. But I think Russia's got it pretty well handled. They're building like a new coal-fired power plant. Like, they start new construction every single month on a new coal-fired power plant. They're not going to be short of power. They don't care about the environment. They don't have environmental restrictions like many other countries falsely bought into the fantasy that somehow by doing that we were going to improve the environment. We're not. Because, like I've said in the past, we just damage the environment remotely through other countries. And it's not like we only damage that country's environment. If you believe that everything man is doing and is damaging the environment, then it doesn't really matter if it's done in, you know, Pakistan or South America or, you know, China or us. It doesn't matter where it's done. The damage is going to be the same, especially if the consumption is the same. You're not going to reduce the damage just because you change the location of where you're getting those goods. Anyway, let me get back to this and have a little drink. Yeah, I said my little editorial here. Uh-oh, dog's barking. Must be something going on. There is something going on. It's all good. Putin wants them... Oh. Countries who depended on Russia or Ukraine for power or food will either do whatever Putin wants them to do, or they will have to completely abandon their green energy policies to produce energy and food. The current problem is you can't just magically turn on the energy production button when you haven't prepared by having power plants built in the last several years and decades. If you can't turn on the energy button, businesses, farms, ranches can't produce food. You also can't instantly start producing fossil fuel refined products when you are not producing any crude oil for yourself. If you have banned or restricted crude oil production, you have to remove the restrictions or bans first, then get all that retired gear fired up again. It's going to take some maintenance and repair and supply chain enhancement to get things going again. So if you think all of that is going to happen before this winter, I've got some terrible news for you. It is not going to happen before this winter. We already had problems with energy availability in the heat of summer in the United States. And as you guys know, I didn't have a show 2 weeks ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago. It was 2 weeks ago. Because we didn't have any power. They shut the power down because it was going to be hot and they were afraid of starting forest fires. What do you think is going to happen when a terrible storm is coming this winter? A terrible freezing rain ice storm that's going to hang around for a week like happened to us 2 years ago right here in Oregon. Number one, they're either going to shut down the power, or number two, the power is just going to go off from the storm itself and they will still be afraid of starting fires, because even though, you know, plants and trees are soaking wet and frozen and all that stuff, houses and buildings can still burn. And if it's a power wire that causes the fire, they don't want to have that responsibility either. Not only that, just the fact that we're not producing enough power to meet the demand right now. California shuts off, limits power consumption on a regular basis because they don't have enough power for everything. So all those beautiful, fancy electric cars have to go uncharged between, 4 p.m. and midnight or something like that. Yeah, so it's going to be, wherever you are, whoever you are, it's going to affect you one way or another. All the countries, including the USA, who are far too dependent on foreign entities for energy, oil, and food, are soon going to find out how they have jeopardized their population. Remember, the regulation and bans or other restrictions that were put into place were all based on a fantasy, the fantasy that somehow green energy can supply all of the needs of a country. No wind, no power. No sun, no power. Can't block up rivers for hydro, can't build nukes, and God forbid you use fossil-fueled power plants. Putin and China are using fossil-fueled power plants and pretty much everything else, and they are in no need of either power, food, or oil. Yeah, so get ready, man. We kind of keep coming back to this, and actually I have a little bit, I don't have good news today, except my own personal kind of, recovery news. But I think there's some solutions. I think there's things that we can talk about in the end, and that's why I kind of bring this stuff out be ready. Do what you can and know what is going to affect, prices. I heard an excellent description today, and I want to share it with you. And they were talking about how supply and demand works and the cost of things. And the guy was telling a story about being in high school, and he said his high school economics teacher, which, we didn't have economics. Well, maybe we did. I didn't take it in high school. He says, look at it this way. He says, you walk into the classroom and nobody's in here. And he says, two young women come in. He says, those two young women have like a really high value because there's only two women in the room. He says, and then 5 minutes later, 100 women come in that room. He said the value of those first two just went down quite a bit because now you have 102 to pick from. But what he was getting at is if you have, and I kind of converted it to this local cookie factory we have. So let's say the local cookie factory who is looking for employees, let's say they have 10 employees. Well, those 10 employees can only produce, let's say, 1,000 packages of cookies a day. Let's just say, for example, 1,000 packages of cookies. Well, let's say they had 1,000 employees at the cookie factory. Then maybe they could produce 10,000 or 100,000 packages of cookies. Well, if you only have 1,000 packages of cookies and everybody wants that cookie, the value of that cookie is really high. But that's all you can produce because you don't have the manpower to produce more cookies. But if you produce a ton more cookies because you have a higher labor force, well, then the price of cookies comes down because that, it's one in a million. You're buying one package out of a million. It's a lot cheaper than one package out of 1,000 when the demand is high. And here's the problem right now. Like the government has currently, they kind of currently believe that there is no labor shortage. But if you look at every single business around, every single business, at least in this area, and from what I'm hearing from other people in, a lot of different areas of the United States, There's a labor shortage. There may be a million jobs. I mean, Biden could, you know, preach all day long about having created, you know, who knows how many million more jobs, but people aren't working. They're not taking those jobs. So if you don't have the labor force to produce more product, the products that are out there are going to be more expensive. And that's where we are right now. Everything is more expensive. And I was hearing some guys talking on a show that I like to listen to, and they were talking about the stuff that they, well, let's say, air quotes, splurge on. And, they were talking about, okay, let's say hand soap. They're like, you know, I just buy the cheapest hand soap. It's just for your hands. Is it soapy? Yeah, it works. I just buy the cheapest stuff. But then they were talking about, you know, like eggs. You know, you can't go in what are you going to do? Buy smaller eggs? I mean, are they less per dozen if they're smaller? Probably a little bit. But eggs have gone up incredibly. And it's not like you can find the cheaper brand of egg. I mean, yeah, there are some choices like organic or non-organic or white eggs or brown eggs. You know, farm fresh eggs, they call them in the store, but they're not really. I mean, they're as farm fresh as any other egg in the store, I'm sure. There's nothing like a farm fresh egg, man. And thank God we invested in some more chickens this year. They are just now. So do you guys remember the episode I did when I was talking about the meat birds and that I wanted to cross a layer, like a daily layer, with a bird that produces more meat but isn't a straight out meat bird because they're not very hardy. Well, I've done that. And those eggs are just now starting to become available. The hens are just starting to lay the eggs. The first ones are always real tiny, about the size of a ping pong ball. And, you know, they'll eventually get big enough, and then we'll eventually be to the point where we get 6 or 8 per month and we start raising them as meat birds. And man, thank God we did that. I mean, even if we stopped right now producing other food, we're going to have eggs for the next several years. Well, unless somebody comes and steals our chickens, which it wouldn't surprise me at this point if that were to happen. But, so that's kind of a good thing. But you're just not able to negotiate every single price of something in the market. The value, I mean, companies aren't raising prices right now just to screw the consumer. There's a cost to producing products. There's a cost of production. You know, and right now that cost is really high per unit. Anyway, we need more units. Oh, so what is the next threat to survival? This was an interesting story. Let me bring it up on the over here on the web page. Let's see. Does it look decent? It looks okay. Is this the biggest threat to our survival? While some say this was on from the Epoch Times. I always call it Epic, but it's Epoch Times. It's not Epic. It's Epoch. While some say climate change is the number one threat to humanity, this threat is capable of putting your life in immediate lethal peril. And it's not just a third world issue. Signs are popping up all over the United States that we're in trouble. And that's just the United States he's talking about. But they do get into the entire world and how this particular... it's water, basically. Be prepared to face the unthinkable with these timely tips. Here's the story at a glance. Let me look at my notes again here. One key environmental threat facing mankind today is increasing lack of potable water. That means drinkable water. Worldwide, thanks to a combination of water pollution and scarcity. Infrastructure, especially in the U.S., but also elsewhere, is also in dire need of repairs and upgrades. I mean, this is the craziest thing. And actually something that always did kind of scare me about living in a city and being on city water. And if you've been around any length of time at all, you actually know that problems occur with the water treatment plants, because the water treatment plants tend to be kind of right near the sewage treatment plants. Sometimes they're the same facility or likely close together. You know, in Oregon, every single year, usually during storms, but it has happened at other times where the sewage treatment plant will leak into the Willamette River. Like if there's a real downpour with, you know, heavy rains that we can't actually, you know, that the water runoff is too much for all the viaducts to handle, the sewage treatment plants are no different than any other, you know, pool of water or sewage or whatever you want to call it. And once, when it overflows, it overflows. It just goes where, you know, where water goes. So, So living in the city, you know, you have these boiling water emergencies. And sometimes you get them, some of these water mains and sewage mains in cities and just the pipes, laid in these cities, they're 100 years old in some places. Like there's some pieces of pipe that have been laid so long ago. They're I'll tell you my own example. When we had to redo our septic system here on the homestead, when we uncovered the iron pipe, it was basically just flakes of iron. Like, it still sort of maintained a pipe shape, and so liquid was still flowing through it, but, yeah, it just came apart in pieces when we got down to removing it. So, you know, you could imagine they use the same iron pipe in a lot of these, sewage city layouts. Basically, the water and sewer for the cities. And, you know, when sewage ruptures today, I'm sure back in the day, it's still a good idea. I mean, what else are you going to do with sewage? But here's the problem. So today, there's so many more problems in the water and sewage that can cause, you know, significant harm to humans. We have so much more like variable diseases and viruses and bacteria. We have bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics. We have antibiotics literally that is in the water and in the sewer. So bacteria that are growing in there can actually become resistant to the antibiotics that are flushed down the toilet or peed out, you know, passed through your body in one way or another. And I'm actually going to get to that in a minute. But, living in the city is a problem because you can have this contamination. You can have this contamination in your drinking water where they send out, you know, this alert that you need to boil your water until we get the problem fixed, which is who knows how long, sometimes days, sometimes weeks. It's never hours because it's impossible to clear the pipes in a couple hours. But let's look at some of the things that they've been having problems with. During a single week in September 2022, E. coli contamination was found in Baltimore. Toxic arsenic levels were discovered in New York City and in Jackson, Mississippi. 180,000 people are left without running water due to a water system breakdown. You know, and the crazy thing is, you're just living your life, and you think everything's cool. Like, hey, just go to the faucet, turn it on, I get water. No, there was no water because the entire system broke, and they couldn't deliver water through the water system. Man, you talk about your life coming to a screeching halt in a hurry. This is why I always kind of talk about, you know, some basic things that you should have. You should have water. You should have enough water that when something like this happens, you get in your car with your water and you drive away to somewhere that doesn't have to boil their water or somewhere that actually has running water. And usually you don't have to go that far to find it, but you have to be able to escape situations like this. Hazardous water pollutants include, but are not limited to, arsenic, fluoride, which I was flabbergasted to see that they put fluoride on the list, but thank God they did, nitrate, pharmaceutical drugs, pesticides, per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, PFASs, and microplastics. So all of this stuff can be in your water system. In San Francisco, wastewater from 37 sewage plant has turned the San Francisco Bay a murky brown and dead fish litterate shores. The cause for the die-off is a toxic algae bloom triggered by the nitrogen and phosphorus from the feces and urine in the discharged wastewater. I mean, so that's like a normal city treatment system. And it's actually changed the entire San Francisco Bay. That should be kind of terrifying in a way. I'm going to get to some good news in a bit here. But, I mean, right now, it really should shake you a little bit that there is so much stuff going on with the water. I got to check the... I just want to check the chat room and see if anything was going on. Somebody tell me my sound stopped or something. No, it's all good. Let's see, what else we have? According to the World Health Organization, more than 2 billion people worldwide drink water contaminated with feces, 6 resulting in hundreds of thousands of deaths due to preventable diseases each year. This is crazy. I was watching a documentary 2 weeks ago, and it was on, I forget what country it was, I forget which city it was, but basically there was a bunch of houses built on the water, and it wasn't Venice. A bunch of houses built on the water outside of a giant city, like a very heavily populated city. But these houses were people who were basically homeless lived. I mean, they basically put, shacks together on the water and, supported them with, poles, and the everything was flimsy. The floors were flimsy. The walls were flimsy. They had little camp stoves for cooking. And the water, people had a hole in their floor where they went to the bathroom in the water below them, and then you saw children swimming and playing in that water, and you saw people taking that water, of course, taking that water out to cook food. And you gotta know, there's a lot of sickness going on in that area, no doubt about it. Because the area where they built their houses was also the flush point for the giant city that's built right there on the water. And where all that water and sewage from that city is going, right into that same little harbor area. And it looked disgusting. And the guy doing the documentary literally pointed out kids who were, going to the bathroom right in the water, and you could see feces floating by. So it's crazy. It's not unusual, even in developed countries for people to be living. I mean, look at San Francisco, for crying out loud. Look at Portland, for crying out loud, where we have river systems that become polluted with sewage so we can't, get in the water. I would never think about getting in the Willamette River, to be honest with you. Even though, sometimes you see it running kind of clear and fast, I just nope, not doing it. Don't trust the government and what they've done and the restriction, the regulations they have in place. I mean, hell, sometimes you get a warning that, we had this breach in our system 3 days ago and we kind of forgot to tell you. It's not like they forgot to tell you, but it's like, well, at the time we didn't think it was so bad and it kind of got worse. And, so if you're feeling sick, go get some help. Let's see, water treatment plants fail to filter out an estimated 93% of the drug compounds in wastewater. And the 2017 U.S. Geological Survey found that 80% of U.S. waterways contained pharmaceutical pollution. 13, which can have a devastating impact on aquatic species. I don't know what 13%. Anyway, this is an interesting problem that we actually faced locally here, because there's this town has a population, I'm just going to guess, at 3,000, because it says that our population is 5,500, but they actually counted the inmates who were in federal prison here for that census. So let's say if you subtract the 2,500 or 3,000 inmates that are in the federal prison, basically you got 2,500 people here. But here's the problem. So we have this beautiful water treatment plant. We don't use it. And a sewage treatment plant, which we also don't use, that has been, you know, filtering the sewage and processing the water that's coming out of that giant federal prison for, well, since 1989 now, so a long time. And what they were finding is they had measurable, I mean, this was 15 years ago when I worked at the federal prison, they had measurable amounts of ibuprofen in the water. Like, not the water before it was treated, the water after it was treated that you're sending into people's homes down there in the big metropolis of Sheridan. And that's just ibuprofen, for crying out loud. Think of this penicillins. And let me tell you just a little bit about antibiotics and doctors. So here's the deal. Like, you go to the doctor, and this is one of the stupidest things I think has ever happened in medicine. And I wish everybody would become smarter about it, but they don't. So before COVID, let's say, you would go to the doctor because you had a cold, right? And the cold is caused by a virus, right? But people would go to their doctor, and if the doctor didn't give them a prescription for an antibiotic, which works against bacteria, they would think the doctor's an idiot. Like, you know, hey, doc, don't you think I need an antibiotic for this? And if the doctor had any presence of mind to make an argument, he would say, well, no, you don't need an antibiotic because you have a virus, and the antibiotic isn't going to help the virus in any way, shape, or form. And people would be like, oh, that guy's an idiot. I'm never going to go back and see that doctor again because he doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, and people, same thing in dentistry. People come in to see you as a dentist, and they have a toothache because they cracked a tooth, you know, or they have a little tiny cavity, and now they're sensitive part of their tooth is exposed, and you know, until you can get it fixed. So if you see them on an emergency, you can't fix it right then. It's like, well, do I need to be on an antibiotic? Well, no, you don't. You don't have an infection of bacteria. You have a cavity, which is kind of an infection of bacteria, but it's only in the surface of the tooth. You don't have a systemic infection or a focal infection where we need to fight it with an antibiotic. But you know what? Same thing in dentistry. If you don't give them an antibiotic, they think you're an idiot and they're not going to come back. Drink time. Yeah, let's go on here. Another major source of water contamination is runoff from factory farms. So, of course, we got to get the factory farms in here. You know why? Because we have to start producing less meat, for God's sake. So you have these giant factory farms. In addition to farming chemicals such as nitrates, which pose a serious threat to water quality, there's the issue of drug-resistant bacteria, and which are a result of antibiotic overuse in livestock. So back to the antibiotics getting in the water, and bacteria in the sewage system and in the groundwater and in even the processed water, bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics that we have, right? Now, I'm not saying that everybody should go out and get their own spot of land and start growing their own food and manage their own septic system and drain field and have a well dug deep, but, you know, it's maybe a safer way to live. I don't know. Honestly, I understand people living in communities. I totally do. But today we've packed communities so tightly. You know, we just build bigger and, you know, more expensive, more complex equipment to deal with the waste, the waste of human beings living in such a concentrated area, that, you know, it's gonna cause problems that are, you know, could become catastrophic. I mean, it could truly become catastrophic. And I think, you know, generally we could do a better job of living, you know, spread out a bit, you know, live where there's land, soil that can grow food and water, and, you know, not overdo it. But these factory farms, you know, they hit on them all the time because, because, you know, they want to cut down food production, meat production specifically. So, you know, it's another hit against these farms. And I don't really like the beef off of those farms anyway. You know what I'm talking about, the large feedlot farms. You know, if you ever have like a free-range beef, a grass-fed beef that may be finished with some grain, and you buy it from your local guy who's, you know, what, 4 miles, 5 miles away from here is my guy, raises our beef, you know. And when it's butchered, it hangs for 30 days. It hangs for 30 days so the meat becomes tender and beautiful. And, you know, that guy is not going to do something to that beef that's going to be unhealthy for me when I eat it. And he's going to want me to come back and buy another beef next year. So he's going to make sure that he does the best job and gives me the highest quality beef I can get. And safely, too, because he knows if he causes a problem in the community, you know, people are going to be pissed. You know, if he contaminated the community water supply, people would be pissed. If he contaminated the groundwater on his farm, he'd be pissed. So he raises just enough beef, man, for people who want to buy beef from him. And I guess he's doing hogs now, too, which is awesome. Let's go on. Where the heck was I? The global crisis of vanishing groundwater. Now, here's one that could get me or anybody living out in the world, even on your own farm, your little homestead, your, you know, cabin in the woods, whatever. Of course, they're going to blame this on the farmers. Industrial farming also uses enormous amounts of potable water for irrigation, and in many areas, aquifers are being drained faster than they can be refilled, resulting in water scarcity. And then they go on to talk about NASA mapping of groundwater storage trends for the Earth's 37 largest aquifers. Reveals that 21 aquifers have already exceeded their sustainability tipping points and are being depleted. So this is kind of amazing if you think about it. Now, I don't know where these 21 or 37 largest aquifers are. I'm sure you can find it on a map. But I can almost guarantee you that those aquifers feed probably some very large cities. Maybe not, but more than likely, you know, cities are generally built where you have a pretty good supply of water, since everybody in the city is going to need water, right? So, yeah, this could be a problem, but what I was going to say is, so So let's say, what if I'm on one of those aquifers and my well is 200 feet down, but the aquifer goes down, I don't know, 1,000 feet? Well, guess what? The person who's down at 1,000 feet is going to have water a lot longer than I am going to have water if I'm only at 200 feet. And you know, here's the funny thing. Whenever you go to dig a well, it's expensive. So you're always thinking, okay, I want the least amount of depth I can get to have a good flow of water from my well. The problem is, anybody deeper than you that's in that same aquifer is going to be taking your water. And you know, in times like this, you know, like we've had in Oregon here, where we've had extended dry spell, like, I don't know, 80 days without significant rainfall, like the rain going in the ground to start replenishing the aquifer. You can imagine. Matter of fact, one of my neighbors ran out of water a week ago, 2 weeks ago. He knew it because every year, right about when the rain starts, they run out of water in their well. So, and I don't know how deep their well is. I know we're deeper than they are. But that's a problem, man. You run out of water, you're out of water. So he, because he's been preparing, he's prepared for, he's, so his dad owned the property before he did. His dad passed about 2 years ago, I think, maybe three, but in the last 2, 3 years. And he was always used to running out of water. So they had a gigantic water storage, well, tanks placed, so that they could store water, and then when they need water, they come see one of us neighbors, and we fill their containers for them. I'm not talking, you know, 5 gallons. I'm talking a 1,000 gallon container, 800 gallon containers that they can, you know, haul in their on their flatbed or whatever. So yeah, you know, if I'm on one of those largest aquifers, and it's being depleted, I'm gonna start running out of water right here on the homestead. So we have to be prepared, ready for when that happens. If that happens, you know, what are we gonna do next? And of course, it's gonna require drilling a deeper well. So, let's see what other problems we got coming. Oh, the solution. So here, this person offers a solution. Oh yeah, and I only have a couple minutes, and I want to get to the last thing. Oh my gosh. On a personal level, we also need to make changes in how we use water and how we grow crops. Selecting the most appropriate crops for any given area would result in more efficient water usage and re would reduce the amount farmers would have to draw from our aquifers. In short, we need to grow food with less water. So this is going to be Bill Gates' thing. Remember the magic seed I talked about a couple episodes ago, that Bill Gates is going to figure out how to, you know, grow seeds that are resistant to drought and are resistant to herbicide, resistant to pesticide, and, you know, just, you know, the magic seed is coming, and here's an argument for it. You know, honest to God, just live somewhere where you can grow a little bit of food, learn how to be really efficient at it. I agree that we overuse the land, man. If you go back to the Bible, they used to let the land rest once every 7 years, you know, and replenish itself. Now it's all artificial. We don't naturally let the ground be renourished. Yeah, I'm not going to get to that last story, of course. Yeah, we don't let the land naturally get renourished. If we don't have artificial fertilize, well, artificial, you know, growth stimulation like we're depending on from Russia and Ukraine, like this fertilizer shortage that we went through this year, you wait until you see. Remember I was talking about like inflation and the cost of goods and stuff? You're going to see there's going to be less food on the market. And there's going to be, that's going to lead to higher prices throughout the winter. So store up what you can, you know, be ready, be prepared, have some winter fruit, some winter cashews, or, you know, dry food to depend on. Hey,
thank you for listening
to
the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platforms. Until next time, remember, all bleeding eventually stops.